So good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming today, this morning. So before I get into the formal teaching this morning, since there are perhaps new people here, or old people here, or just people here, I always like to now and then give opportunity for questions. So if anybody has any questions, and again, this is not a time for shyness, this is an opportunity for us to dialogue. Any questions about the practices that we did here this morning, or in terms of your own meditative spiritual life, or your studies, or whatever practice, if there's anything that you have a question about, or you're confused about, or not clear about, why don't we begin there? So I'm sort of just check your mind and see if there's anything in your own, what you experienced today, or just in your own life, that you're not clear how to proceed. The Buddhist teachings and the all the practices are to help wake us up. Now, wake us up to what? Wake us up so we can lead a good life, have good relationships, be happy, be free of suffering. So if that path is not clear to you, please feel comfortable asking a question about anything. Fairly enlightened group, except for one person. Good. Thank you, Krista, for willing.
As the holidays approach, what advice do you have for us who might have emotionally, or to be a little bit more specific. Mm-hmm. So I have a 2-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. We, as a family value, are vegetarian and we don't drink. And that's important to us. Mm-hmm. So for holidays, we feel like we want a holiday to represent our values in a special way. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, the most important day should reflect our values. But my family, mm-hmm, is not vegetarian. Struggling with the balance between respecting my family and being with them,
mm-hmm,
and also respecting,
yeah,
my new family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, other than wisdom.
So, are you hosting Thanksgiving for your family, or are you going to a family member's Thanksgiving?
We haven't committed yet.
Okay. Yeah. So, obviously, the question is, I mean, it's a specific question about the upcoming holidays, but it's really about, how do we deal with a world that doesn't necessarily operate the way we'd like it to? So I can basically put this one away and we can spend the rest of the hour talking about that. It's a pain, I tell you. Wouldn't it be wonderful if the whole world marched to our drum, right? The whole world, everyone, all the politicians, all the people, wouldn't it be wonderful if they all... So we have to acknowledge that, we are the minority, right? And perhaps we are the ones within our family systems, our closest relations, our largest family within the society. We are the ones, not like we're special, but just that we are the ones who are changing, who perhaps are looking into life, our lives, our minds, our habits, our ways of consuming, all these kinds of things. And we are coming up with different conclusions than a lot of the rest of society, and therefore we are charting, a different path for ourselves, for our families to the best of our ability. But the truth is what? We are, a minority. You know, we're a minority in society, and we're often a minority in our family, or most of us, because we have come to the path or to the spirituality or meditation, or want to call it, later in life. We weren't born into it, many of us. We have to realize that most people haven't made those changes and shifts. So we have to be understanding and tolerant. There is one solution, which you've seen that various kind of spiritual groups have done over the course of history, which is to separate. Right? You just go off somewhere. You set up your own little world, you set up your own community, you kind of just only relate to those people who share the same values, and those are kind of orthodox kind of communities, aren't they? Where they just, kind of circle the wagons, right? And there's those of us on the inside who are good, and then there's that evil world out there, right? Everybody know what I'm talking about? But that's not the Buddhist tradition. Buddhist tradition is very open, right? Accepting, understanding, and yet very true to our path in life. Right? And I think that's, I think that's the balance, right? We all have families. I have a family. specifically, if you want to just use the example of vegetarianism. I became a vegetarian in the 60s, right? These days, it's not so unusual to be a vegetarian. People kind of, you sort of go anywhere and people talk about it, or understand it. I spent many years nobody understanding it. So basically, I just had to find my way. I would say, no thank you to the meat or the fish or the or whatever, but I wouldn't try to impose, myself on anybody else. I would always go out of the way. That's fine. I'll just eat potatoes. it's only a couple of meals. I know I'm not going to die. And when people are, offering drinks or whatever, I would just say, no thank you. Do you have anything else? It's, right? So I think, we are part of the world, right? And this is the world that eventually we would like to affect in a positive way, right? So, when we show up at family gatherings or other kinds of social gatherings, I think there is a contribution we can make in how we are and how we relate to people, right? And to me, the food and the drink is not important. My children were vegetarian, so, sort of that kind of thing. When we were at social gatherings or whatever, I guess the difference would be when we were having events at our house, then they would be meat-free and alcohol-free, which for a number of my family members made the choice of my house for holidays less than inviting. which I understood, and so it's sort of accepting the world as it is, and not seeing it as evil. And again, even with your daughter, she's going to enter this world, right? And the world is not going to operate according to the kind of values and principles that you and David are raising her. And so you don't want to make her too much like a like a hothouse flower or something, that's very, can only exist in very, and we don't want our practice. The practice of Zen is the practice of real, vibrancy in the world, entering the world freely, and not being turned. See, that's the issue, not being turned by the things of the world. And so in a certain way, we have to acknowledge the world as it is and accept the way it is, and learn how to be in it in a skillful, wise way, right? Not being, attached to things or not making a big deal about things. Some things you can make a big deal about. Now, again, if your family dinners become, you know, kind of excessive in their drinking, and at the end of the day, everybody, you know, at that point, you may want to leave, or, you know what I mean, or something. I mean, it's not as if, again, it's just, you know, it's not as if we don't have values or kind of environmental cues. So I think, you know, I think a certain degree of protection, you know, of our children is good. But again, you know, all moments are teaching moments. And I think, you know, when we're in environments that are really very counter to the way we live, you know, we don't have to isolate. But we can use it to help our children understand, you know, this is the way the world is, or this is what people do. And, you know, so they have some understanding of what they're getting into, because, you know, your daughter's young now, but I assure you, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school, I mean, she's going to see it all. You know, unless you kind of homeschool her and keep her, you know, very apart. And so I think it's, you know, I think that's important for all of us. And again, you know, how do we change the world? You say you want to change the world. Well, obviously change begins with us and peace begins with us and all that good stuff. But we also interface with the world. We interface with people. And we want to bring our Dharma into all those interactions. Right? And I'm sure you can do it skillfully with your family. Yeah, I mean, so don't be afraid. You know, sometimes we just got to toughen up a little bit, right? You know what I mean? There are some people that are easy. You see what I'm saying? It's easy. You know, it's easy to be around people who share your same values and talk your same talk. I mean, you know, that's easy. You know, anybody can be a patient, compassionate, at ease person in that kind of environment. But how do we develop strength in our understanding and compassion and our patience unless we're willing to put ourselves in environments, you know, where that is challenged, kind of raises the bar? Then you really know, you see? We may think, oh, I'm just the most patient, understanding, calm, loving person in the world, right, as long as we're alone, you see? Right? You know, but you know, we laugh, but it's true. You know, I mean, you know, this is the test. You know, there's a well-known kind of popular saying in Buddhism says, you know, when things are going well, everybody is a great practitioner. You see? You know, it's only when things aren't going well that you can really tell who the good practitioners are and who aren't. And there's a lot of truth in that, you know. So again, you know, actually in the Lojong training, it says, I mean, something so bizarre, it says, take adversity at the path of awakening. It's a very profound teaching, because most of us would go, no, get rid of adversity. you know, get rid of all negativity, get rid of all negative people. Only, you know, that's the path of practice. No. You know, we need to learn to be in the midst of adversity and difficulty and how to transform it. How do we transform it? Because we use it to transform ourselves. You know, how do I, you know, because a lot of times when something is not turning out the way we want, or the situation is beginning to go south a bit, right? And we start responding with a kind of a negative way or an afflictive way. It's because why? Because we're stuck, right? Because we have this deep sense of whatever it is within our own bodies, our health, other people, the world, the politics. It's basically things are not going the way I expected them to go, right? Things are not going the way I wanted them to go. And that is all the realm of ego and self and fixation and reification. That's not life. Has anybody ever noticed that life sort of has its own energy? And it just endlessly just flows in all directions. And we're the ones in the midst of that who go good, bad, wanted, unwanted, should be, shouldn't be. See, that's all coming from us. Is that clear? You know, life is just unfolding. In Buddhism, we say it unfolds why? Because of causes and conditions. It as simple as that. Right? Why is your family the way they are? Well, because of causes and conditions. I mean, you know, they had their upbringing and they had their background and what they've been exposed to and what they've been doing all these years. And the way that, you know what I mean? That's why they're the way they are. You know, why are you the way you are? Because you had a different set of experiences along the way. So opened you to change. Or maybe you were open to change and they're not or never had. And so we, you know, if we think that life has given us good opportunities, you know, such as encountering the Dharma or the path and learning about the path of awakening and path of love and compassion and understanding, we should be grateful. But we shouldn't be harshly judgmental on those who really haven't, which is most people, right? I often say to people, no, we're the oddballs. See, they're not the oddballs. We're the oddballs. Right? You see? And that's okay. Right? I mean, there's nothing wrong, you know, in an insane world of understanding, to be sane is abnormal. Right? Is that clear? To be sane is normal, to be clear, to be grounded, to be free of afflictions, right? To run your life really on understanding and compassion and openness, you know, that's abnormal in this world, isn't it? I mean, we all read the same news, don't we, more or less? So, is that a long answer to a short question? Thank you. Are there any other questions about practice? Yes.
So it's just having the awareness of this tendency to get stuck in that way that you just described. It's just having the awareness of that tendency that arises in all of us. Enough?
No. No. But it's you know, I mean, you know, this is being recorded in live stream, so I have to repeat the question. So the question is just being aware of that we have these issues or these situations, is this enough? And the obvious answer is no. I mean, practice, you know, I mean, Buddhism is what I know, so I talk about Buddhism. I mean, there are many different paths. Yeah, in Buddhism, it's a very comprehensive path of transformation, of which mindfulness is one part. You know, it's a very key part. If you can't see what's going on, you know, how do you know what to change? Okay? So developing self-awareness, right? Which includes developing criteria of what a healthy emotion or a healthy response is, what an unhealthy emotion and an unhealthy response is, what creates goodness, what type of mind states, what types of words, communication, what type of actions with my body, you know, what creates goodness, what creates wholesomeness, and what creates its opposite, right? So we need criteria in our life, right? And we also need mindfulness. So we, you know, to have criteria but to not know what's happening is not very helpful, right? Is that clear? But then, you know, that's not enough either. Because what are we, and this is personal, you know, for all of us, what am I committed to? You see? So I have a choice. See, in this situation, I have a choice. Do I show up in a wholesome way or do I show up in an unwholesome way? Do I respond with anger? Do I respond with understanding? Right? Do I respond with patience or do I respond with frustration and irritation? Right? Do I respond with fear or do I respond with confidence? So just to see, just to see what's going on and to know there is options of response is for many people a tremendous step forward. Most people don't even see that. They're just endlessly repeating, you know, the way we've always responded to situations, because we say what? Well, this is the way I am. This is what we always say. Well, this is the way I am. Or don't all people, isn't it normal to get angry? Right? Well, isn't it normal to have fears? Isn't it normal to ruminate about the past and think about the past? Isn't it normal to worry about the future? You know? So we talk this way, right? And so we have all kinds of ways of either saying it's normal, like every, you know, I always say, well, how do you know what everybody does? I mean, you know, there are 6 billion people. I mean, you really know what everybody does? You know, you may know what you do, right? And then people, well, again, like I said, people will go, well, this is just the way I am. No, it's not the way you are. You weren't born irritated. You know what I mean? You know, you weren't born with issues, right? You weren't born with problems, right? Those are things you developed, right? We're born in a certain sense with a very pure mind, a very natural mind. And so all these things that we think are so normal or so me is not. We were conditioned. We, right from the beginning, how we're treated, how we're raised, how people respond to us, our needs, our wants, loved, unloved. You know, these are kind of family grow up in, the values, the way they treat each other, the way we relate, you know, you go to school, society. I mean, we're all just, you know, we are not self-actualized beings. We are, you know, we've all been molded by causes and conditions of life. Everyone here. Right? And coming back, what is your name? Rachel. And so coming back to Rachel, it's like, you know, spiritual life is really about waking up and kind of going where Rachel begins to kind of get some self-awareness, begins to see the situation, see how she's responding, right? Even in ways that seem perfectly normal to her. And she now goes, oh, you know, is there another way? We begin to consider, is there another way? You know, I'm just responding. I'm just showing up in life the way I've been always conditioned. Is there another way? And most of us don't know another way, right? So that's why we become so-called spiritual seekers, right? We start reading. We start listening to talks. We start coming to meditation. We got, you know, we're seeking, right? We're seeking a better way in life, right? But we don't know it. Why, how do we don't know it because, you know, we haven't been exposed to it. Because these aren't the kind of conversations that went on in our dining room table when we were growing up. Right? Unless you had a highly unusual family. Right? And when you were a teenager, people were not talking about these kinds of issues, were they? You see, when you're in your formative years. You know, that's why we now seek a spiritual path. We become seekers. But being a seeker is not enough, you see. We want to be spiritual finders. You see, it's good to be seeking when you're, you know, in a stage of trying to discover, right? But you don't want to be endlessly, you know, discovering. You want to find a way. Find a way to liberate yourself from your suffering, from your conditioning, from your fixations, from being stuck in life. Right? And a spiritual path should give us a way, a comprehensive way how to go about this process of transformation. It should be very clear, delineated. Oh, well, this is simple. Just do this, 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 and you will become free. It's you know, again, all I can speak about is Buddhism, but this is a 2,600-year-old path where that's what people have been doing. That's what the Buddha taught. He taught a path of awakening, a path of freedom from suffering, and that path has been transmitted and developed for 2,600 years. It's very clear. It's very simple. The hardest thing to do is what? Comply. I mean, that's the problem. Right? The path is simple. Life is simple. Right? People make such a, like, life is so hard. I mean, why is life hard? You get up in the morning, right? You wake up. What do? You go to the bathroom, you throw some water on your face, you know, tea or coffee, you know, get dressed, take a shower. I mean, whatever you do in the morning, right? And then you just go about your life. Right? Isn't that true? Yeah. And you deal with work, people, situations, you know, just at the end of the day, you get back into bed where it all started. And that's called another day. Doesn't have to be drama. Doesn't have to be endless emotionality and crisis. Does it? No. That's all being created by our mind and other people's minds. Life is simple. Just do one thing at a time. Take one step at a time. Do one act at a time. When you're in the bathroom, just be in the bathroom. Right? When you're making your breakfast, just make your breakfast. Right? When you're showering, just shower. When you're driving to work, just drive to work. When you're at school or work or wherever you are going, just do it. Go from, you know, one thing to another. End of the day, you do whatever you do at the end of the day. What do? You come home, you make dinner, you know, you do. Right? One thing at a time, mindfulness, presence. But we don't do it that way, do we? Everything is a crisis. Everything has to be analyzed. You know, we're fixating all day, getting stuck on this, stuck on that, ruminating about this. You know, all our hurts and our worries and our resentments and our, you know, disappointments, they're all what? They're just the mind fixating. Life just flows. How do you know it flows? Because, see, if anybody here in their life, and we have all different ages, anybody in their life on a daily basis had challenges, crises, difficulties, right? Things that we have just obsessed about and ruminated about and worried about and gotten angry about. Everybody know what I'm talking about? All right. Now, here we are. See? Whatever date this is, November whatever, on a Sunday, here we are, in spite of all of it. Now, how can that be? You see? How come we're not still back there? Stuck in our fixations? It's because life just flows. Mind just flows. The energy of life just flows. Right? Is that clear? See, we're all here no matter what has happened. See, we're all sitting here together in this room. Is that clear? Everybody agree with me? We're all sitting here in the room, right? We may have a story about having a very painful, difficult childhood. We may have a story about having the most wonderful, father knows best childhood ever. Well, we're all just sitting here together. In a certain sense, it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter what our morning was, what our week was. Unless what? Unless we've dragged it here with us. Right? Is that clear? We drag the past with us endlessly, and it's not visible, is it? It's only in our minds. Is that true? I mean, look around the room. I mean, is it obvious who had a good childhood and who had a bad childhood? I mean, look around the room. Right? Who's had a good week and who's had a bad week? Look around. I mean, I'm serious. Look around the room. Look. Can you tell? Right? No. Why not? Because it's all going on in our minds. Nowhere else. Now, to know that and to live with that realization takes practice. That's what practice is about. If you are not happy in your life, if you have a lot of drama in your life, if you have a lot of emotionality in your life, if you have a lot of endless crises, emotional crises in your life, you know why you are? Because you've been practicing it. You're very good at it. Okay? We have to understand, we didn't get here, you know, just miraculously. We've been working our misery for decades. I mean, that may sound a little harsh, but sometimes we need to just hear the truth. Yeah, it is true. Some of us may have had an easier life. Someone might be having a more difficult life. Somebody may be having more health problems, financial problems, personal problems, situations right now, and others may not be, even though that, you know, it shifts over time. But at the end of the day, it's not about any of that. It's about how do we deal with all that. You see. A spiritual practice does not relieve us from the ups and downs and the changeability of the world and life. A spiritual practice gives us the tools to relate to this world of change and instability in a way that doesn't throw us, doesn't create affliction and suffering. So we can show up in the world no matter what's going on with openness, with acceptance, with wisdom, with intelligence. It's not about the world. Right, Krista? I mean, your family, whether you like it or not, are who they are. Right? And that Thanksgiving is going to unfold because you've got a bunch of people driven by their causes and conditions. You know, hopefully they'll be on their best behavior. But they may not be. Right? So at least you can be on your best behavior. Right? I mean, that's really all it is. It doesn't have to scare you. It doesn't have to worry you. But it's something when you know what you're getting into, it's good to kind of prepare yourself so you can show up, you know, in a good way, to be at your best. Right? Good. Did that answer your question, Rachel? Okay. What? Good. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes. No, that's not. The fundamental basis of Buddhism is to wake up and be free and end your suffering. That's what Buddhism teaches. Living in the moment, practicing mindfulness, is part of that path. But Buddha said, I teach only one thing, the cessation of suffering. Buddhism is not a collection of techniques. Buddhism is a path of awakening, ending our suffering, cultivating wisdom and compassion. That's what Buddhism is about. Okay? So your question is, I'm sorry, I just wanted to, there's a lot of people, because mindfulness has been pulled out of Buddhism, you know, these days and taught as a separate thing, people think, you know, Buddhism is mindfulness. No, Buddhism is a practice within a central practice of, okay?
Well,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. That is my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And that you live in the moment, non-judgmental. And apparently you have to.
No, I don't have a different view.
But question,
yeah, what's your question? Okay.
Well, my question may not make sense. It's just you have a different view.
Mm-hmm.
But what keeps bothering me,
yes,
is that these aspirations for happiness,
mm-hmm,
and to become a better person,
mm-hmm,
are not consistent with living.
You're absolutely wrong. They are consistent. Yeah, you're wrong. Yes, you're wrong. They're not inconsistent. I understand that's your view. Yeah, I understand. But, you know, living in the moment non-judgmentally doesn't mean anything if you take it out of context, right? So if I'm in this room, right, and all of a sudden I smell smoke, do I just... I'm just living in the moment. I smell smoke. Breathe in, breathe out. I am now aware that I'm smelling more smoke. Right? Can you see? So from that point of view, living in the moment, right, living mindfully is very helpful. It lets us see what's there. But in the world of action, we have to act. We need to know criteria. Buddha, you know, Buddhism is clear. You need to know criteria. You need to know the difference between suffering and happiness, between wholesome and unwholesome. Mindfulness reveals that. But, you know, again, you know, Buddhism is a path of transformation and action, right? So it begins by being present and being mindful, but there's very clear criteria, right? So we can respond intelligently to situations, right? So like Krista, when she's at Thanksgiving, I don't know if something's getting a little out of hand, right? You may not just want to sit there and go, you know, especially if it's really getting out of hand and somehow it's threatening or whatever, you want to be able to respond to that intelligently. So yes, living in the moment is very important. It is. But we have to, yeah, we need judgment. You know, actually in Buddhism, there are two kinds of wisdom. There's the wisdom, what's called intuitive wisdom, kind of knowing things as they truly are in their absolute nature. But then there's kind of what's called a discriminating wisdom, which we might want to call discernment, right? So I want to be able to discern the difference between a black snake and a rattlesnake. Right? See, if I'm just blissed out in the absolute, hi, snake. Nice snake. You see, if I don't have any discernment that I can't tell the difference between a harmful one and a harmless one, I'm going to get in trouble, right? You see, so we need discernment. Right? I mean, we just need it in life, right? Like Chris is talking about. There are healthy people, good people, right? But there are also people who are very toxic, right? Just to be around them is to kind of open yourself. It doesn't mean you can't be around them if you know how to handle them. But everybody know what I'm talking? There are people like that, aren't there? Right? There are good people, good meaning people, and there are people who are very disturbed. Right? People who do harm to other people. I mean, is that not true? And we have to discern them so we can act intelligently in our response to them. If we don't have discernment, you know, then life can become quite chaotic. And many of us have sort of chaotic lives because we don't have discernment. We can't see the wholesome from the unwholesome. You know, we can't discern good people from bad people, you know? People they're safe to be around, people who are abusive, you know what I'm saying? I mean, isn't it important to have that kind of discernment? If you don't have that discernment, you can get yourself in lots of trouble. Anybody here ever get themselves in a little bit of trouble from lack of discernment? Thank you. All right, we all know that. It doesn't mean that, you know, we were bad people, but we just you know, for cause and conditions, we hadn't learned the capability. That's why when we are young and don't have a lot of discernment, hopefully we have parents, right, who can be discerning for us. Why? Because we don't have that ability. Okay? So parents are usually, of young children, are usually more controlling, you know what I mean? Because children are, you know, they'll run into the road. Right? They don't have discernment. Right? Then they hit adolescence. We have a few teenagers in here. Right? Then it gets a little dicey. Right? Because, you know, we are in a process of developing. Right? So, and teenagers are kind of finding their way. They're learning discernment. Well, how do you learn discernment if you don't practice? So parents have to kind of back out a little bit, right? Watch their teenagers kind of learn to make good choices. How do you learn to make good choices? What? By making bad choices and seeing the consequences. Right? Hopefully seeing the consequences is very clear. But again, a lot of us, you know, we may be in our 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, and we still haven't gotten good discernment yet. We still don't see clearly. And again, this is not judgment. You know, this is not like, you know, because everything is cause and conditions. You don't hate the rattlesnake, do you? No, you don't hate it. You don't even have to kill it. You don't have to hurt it. But you do have to what? Give it space. And not pick it up. Right? That's good discernment. So, again, we have to, for many of us, you know, discernment in a wise way, intelligent way, is still something we're working on. Obviously, mindfulness, you know, gives us a leg up on that, right? Because mindfulness allows us to see things as they are, right? You see? You see that snake, and you see that snake. That snake is black. It's about that big, you know. That snake is, and it's got this rattle thing going, right? See, if you're just lost in space, you know, lost in mindlessness, thinking about things and blah, blah, you know, you could just, you know, walk into a rattlesnake, couldn't you? Okay, so mindfulness is very beneficial, right? It allows us to see what's going on around us and within us. That's the practice of mindfulness. I often describe it, it's like turning on the light in a dark room. When we live in a dark room, or we're in a dark room, and we can't see what's there, and we walk about, we'll bump into things, won't we? We'll bump into walls, we'll trip over furniture, and we won't know why, because we can't see. So many people, their lives are like that. They're always kind of tripping over things and bumping into things and going, what's going on? I mean, why is this always happening? Everybody know what I'm talking about. Many of us are like, Why does this thing keep happening to me? Why do I keep making the same choices and doing the same, you know, having the same? So we got to turn the light on. Right? When the light's on, when you find the light switch and you turn the light on in that room, now you see what's there. Okay. See, that's not a judgment. That's now you see what's there. Now the question is, what do I want to do? Is this the kind of furniture I want in my room? Is it? Is this the color of the walls I want? Is this? Do I really want to live in this kind of room now that I see what it's on? You know, now that the light's on? So for many of us, turning on the light of mindfulness and awareness allows us to see what's going on within and without our life, things we're involved in, people we're involved in, activities we're doing, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, it all becomes, the more mindfulness we have, the more self-awareness we have, it becomes clearer. Now we have what? Choice. We didn't have that before when we were in the dark, did we? When we're in the dark, we're just stumbling about. We're just going like that, you know? But now the light's on, and we can begin to make choices. Is this the kind of mind that I really want to have? Are these the kind of thoughts I want to be obsessing about all day? Is this the kind of feeling state I want to be in all the time? You know? Are these the kind of relationships I want to have with people? So now the light goes on, and we see. Right? And that's, you know, for some people, that's the beginning of a spiritual life, but it's a beginning, you see. For some people, that could be a little painful, you know, to really see oneself, see others much more clearly, to acknowledge things, to come out of denial. We talk this way, right? Come out of denial, to think things clearly, objectively. And then, what do I want to do? And to know you have that freedom, right? Right, Krista, you have that freedom. You know, you see, again, you probably don't see totally clearly, but you see, you know, it's still through your own framework. But at least you see, oh yeah, this is based on past history. This is usually how Thanksgiving goes, based on past history. Who knows, you know, everybody in your family might have been really practicing a spiritual path of meditation the past year. It could be a very different, we never know. We always can, you know, be open. All right, but you have history, okay? And so you have a sense, let's say Thanksgivings have always been a certain way, people always show up in a certain way, if you see that clearly and very objectively, without judgment, without, you know, now you're you know, now you have freedom. How do, you know, seeing it clearly, how do I want to respond to that? See, there's our freedom, to know we have choices, to know we have options. That's freedom. Again, many of us feel stuck in our lives because we don't know that we have freedom. So this kind of freedom, it's you know, we live in a society where freedom is talked about a lot, but it's almost become meaningless, you know. But from, you know, these same words, freedom, liberation, are well known within the Dharma world, the Buddhist world. And they have real meaning. Freedom from suffering. Freedom from delusion. Freedom from fixation. That's freedom. Freedom to make choices, to change. That's inner freedom. We may not always have outer freedom in our world, in our society. But we always have inner freedom. No one can take that away from us. Even in the worst of situations, each of us has that choice. How do I want to deal? How do I want to show up in this situation? There's our freedom. There's our choice. Any other questions? Yes. That's okay. Tell me, well, that's probably a good one to start with. I mean, I'm joking, but it probably is. I mean, there are a couple. Are there like dummies, or dummies for or Buddhism for dummies, right? Dummies for Buddhism. That's another group. That's probably us, right? We're the dummy, and there are probably some others like that, aren't there? Like, yeah, there are some good basic books, but yeah. So Buddhism is a comprehensive path. All right, that's where, you know, I mean, it has right action, which is sort of an ethical, you know, how do we act in the world with our body, with our speech, in ways that do no harm, right, and that promote good. So there's a whole kind of right action, ethical. Then there's right thinking. Then there's compassion. I mean, teach about compassion, and loving kindness, and patience. And okay, so what's kind of, as I was saying to this woman over here, what's kind of been taken out is like mindfulness and meditation. And that's like Rachel's question. It's like, see, and that's why it's not enough. You see, many people going, well, hold on. You know, I am more mindful. I am meditating 30 minutes every day. How come my life isn't transformed? You know what I mean? How come I'm the same jerk I always was? Which is a good question, right? Yeah, it's because, or you know, why am I still essentially, you know, reacting, responding to life the same way? So it's because, again, we're not following this comprehensive path. You know, generosity is a big one. You know, just learn generosity in Buddhism means, you know, no longer centered on me. You see, most of us were only generous to ourselves, our own needs, our own wants, but learning to change our relationship to the world and just be very free and open to give, you know, to show up in the world and give. Most of us show up in the world what? To get. See, we show up in our relationships, you know, with one agenda. What's our agenda? What? Yeah. I mean, I'm in this relationship, why? To meet my needs, to meet my desires, to meet my wants, right? Isn't that why we go into relationships? It never dawns on us, oh, maybe I should be in relationship to give. Right? You know, to give to others, to bring happiness to others, to bring love to others, to bring kindness to others. Right? So generosity, big practice. We could go on, non-self. I mean, that's a big one. Buddhism is a very interesting psychology. Western psychology is based on self. It's ego-based. Buddhist psychology, which is a very highly developed system, is based on non-self. Who would have ever thunk, as they said, right? In this world where we're so centered on self. That actually self in Buddhism is just considered a construct. There's no such real thing as a self. And that can be obvious to anybody in this room. Just look in your mind and see if you can find a self. Right? Like we use the words I, me, mine. Just look into your own mind and see what that refers to. If you can find a little you running around in there. I mean, that's a fascinating one, right? Considering that we spend our whole life protecting and advancing ourself. What if it really didn't exist in any inherent way? Well, that would certainly open things up. So, I mean, it's a lifetime of practice and study and opening. And if you go to the website, our website, which is floridamindfulness.org, there's a whole section, I think it's on the path of practice, teachings, and it will have various teachings and readings and talks and it's a good place to begin. You know, trouble is these days there are, see, in a certain way, when I began my Buddhist practice 40, 50 years ago, you know, there were like a handful of books. I mean, these days there, you know, just so many books, I don't even know, you know. I mean, if I recommended a good book, it was probably not even published anymore, you know. It's, I don't know. But so the website's a good place to start. Any other questions? I think that there's a family. Some of the kids will be coming in soon. Any other questions? We have if there's anything on your mind, don't be shy. Yes.
This is kind of a personal question.
Mm-hmm. Good, we want them to be personal.
No, it's actually personal to you.
Oh.
It's just curiosity because of the fact that you just said that you've been practicing for 40, 50 years.
Uh-huh.
So how often do you find yourself getting hooked?
How often? All day long. The question is, how often do I find... But, you know, the difference, I would say, in being hooked, I say the difference is they don't affect me. There's nothing to get hooked on. So we're all the product of our conditioning, right? We're all product of our conditioning. We've all been doing it a certain way for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, okay? That conditioning has an energy. That doesn't stop. That will lessen and transform over time, but it doesn't stop. So, you know, the issue is not that things keep arising. The issue is, what do we do when they arise, you see? Right? Right? You know, when you get stuck, do you get stuck for 5 hours and it's a big drama and intensity? Or do you get stuck and you just see, oh, just a little, you know, it's like getting caught on something. You just, you know, like your clothes get caught on something. It's not a big deal. It's not like having a, some of us get caught, you know, like something's got us around the throat. Luckily, those days are over. Does that answer you? So good. Why don't we stop here and we'll see what kind of wisdom the children have.